Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Any complaints we need to address moving forward here?
No, I'm good. Just I'm working on that Brewers Outlet gift card for John Cooper.
Sounds like Aaron Boone after a lot of the playoff games.
You're not wrong.
I'm just kidding. Come on. You know what? These guys are playing high-stakes games, the highest. Right? There's going to be more emotion involved, exponentially more emotion. You've had a run of 2 years where you've won 11 consecutive series. You're back-to-back Stanley Cup champions. You're playing at home. And you're trying to fight for every inch you can get. I know he took one question and left. I got it. You got to sit there and you got to be able to take the questions when you win, take the questions when you lose. But the emotion of doing this, you know, everybody feels it that's around it. Everybody. I mean, do you think I get on a plane after a team I broadcast for doesn't win and I'm like going, hey, great, hey, what's the... No, I mean, it bothers me when they lose. Yeah, unfortunately, I've been on, more than my fair share of those flights. But it hurts. You want to know why it hurts? Because you're totally invested and you care. And, I go back, let's take something here. Penn State is not a good basketball team in 1993. Lost by 48 points at Indiana in their first ever Big Ten road game. 1 month later, they played Indiana back in Rec Hall, and Indiana's ranked number one in the country. And Penn State lost the game in double overtime. And we all know about the call at the end of regulation with Greg Bartram and in the app. I mean, and it was just absolutely blown. I mean, Penn State should have been at the free throw line putting the game away with seconds to go in regulation. And instead, no basket, and Indiana had the ball and they tied the game up. And for years, when people would, let's just say for the next 5, 6, 7 years, people come up to me and they'd say, the best basketball game I ever saw was that Penn State Indiana game. And I said, you have to be kidding me. I said, really? Oh yeah. Well, you don't think so? I said, no. He said, why not? I said, because they lost. They lost, and the call was wrong, and they lost. I went home that night and was just disgusted and sick about the fact they lost that game. Disgusted and sick. I said, that's going to be my top basketball moment? I had so many people say that to me, and I shook my head over and over again. Losing stinks. I mean, look at the teams you root for. All right, so
it stinks, to put it mildly.
All right, let's get to our play-by-play call of the day. And when a goal happens and nobody's sure it happened, it's really weird.
Here's the quick counterattack. It's Padre back in action, denied by Vasilevsky. Oh, what a play! In. I think it is in.
We are looking for the signal from the officials. They're going to
take a look at the replay for sure. They think they have won the game. Here's Kadri, makes a great move on Sergachev. It's going to hit Vasilevsky and then the back of the net.
Yeah, it's up there in the net. I don't know why there was any question unless they thought it was sitting on the top of the netting.
Nazem Kadri back in the lineup after surgery on his thumb. A brilliant individual effort.
We have a goal.
It's a goal and a heroic return to action for Nazem Kadri.
Sure was. And what happened was the puck got lodged in the top of the net, got lodged underneath. And that's why at first they couldn't tell. In fact, Wes McCauley's right behind the net. He didn't call it right away himself. It was the strangest ending to the game. But the Colorado, it's weird. The players on the ice didn't seem to know, but the Colorado bench knew. And they poured out onto the ice, and they're up 3-1. Game 5, the Avalanche have a chance to win the series at home on Friday night, tomorrow night. All right. Now let's turn our attention to Pittsburgh. Pirates right now in extra innings in a 7-7 game with the Cubs. Rob Beerttemple does join us from PNC Park. Talk about the team. Rob, it's always a pleasure. Great to have you with us.
How you doing, Steve? I don't know if it's a single time. It has its moments.
Well, maybe you're going to have some moments. We'll see. I mean, so they've started to bring the kids up. So I'll start with this. Jim Bowden sent Ben Cherington a text and about, hey, this is exciting. Cherington evidently, because I heard him tell the story, sent back an emoji text, and it was of a turtle. So it's slow. And Bowden said, hey, 2 years, I think you got this going. Okay, so in 2 years, can they have this going?
I kind of figured even coming into this season that the window, if it's going to creak open, probably 24 or 25 is a reasonable expectation for that. They've made a lot of moves bringing up the kids this year. But it's interesting when you look at it. A lot of them have been moves, and I alluded to this the other day in my story, that they've made moves with the kids, but it's playing out process kind of moves.
Yeah.
It's not, Cruz is the first big guy that you think, well, this is a piece, cornerstone piece going forward. He's really kind of the first one that come up. Sawinski was a surprise, and they're going to need more of those, but he's exactly what they need. He was a guy that they brought up thinking he'd be here short term, fill a need. Reynolds was on the COVID IL at the time. And he's just, Sawinski has looked pretty good. His average, some of the numbers are still a little low. The power is there, and he's looked pretty good in the field. So he stuck around. Other guys that they brought up, you've got Cal Mitchell. Those kinds of guys, and you wonder, are they really long-term everyday players? Maybe, maybe not, and that's kind of what the Pirates are figuring out now before the window opens or before it's due to open. This is the time you can kind of experiment a little bit, probe a little bit and figure out just what you have, what kind of role would this guy fill down the road if and when some more of the bigger pieces. I was talking to producer before I came on about Leover Peguero.
Yeah.
He's a guy you would figure is a piece. He's a, he's a cornerstone, whether it's a short or second or whatever. He's not here yet. They gave him a little taste. Then they set him down and kind of did the same thing with Swaggerty. They gave him a little taste, kind of get that awe factor shaken off. And then maybe when he gets back, that won't be a consideration. You have already been here. And that's one less hurdle to have to clear whenever he finally does get back up, presumably for a longer run.
All right.
So short answer, yeah, kids are coming. Longer answer, yeah, but it's still not the kids. It's still not the big guys.
Right. So let's start with Cruz playing shortstop. Is it important in some ways for the Pirates to let him get it out of his system to play short, to play shortstop? And then maybe he shows them he should be, but at least let him get him out of his system and give him the shot?
Yeah, I think you know, coming into this year, I would have said that he's going to be an outfielder, and the sooner they can get that done, the better. And talking with some scouts who saw in the minor leagues, it wasn't like he was actively fighting the Pirates on becoming an outfielder or playing in the outfield, but it clearly was something he's not interested in. I can put it that way.
Right.
And at this point, you know, it goes back to with like a guy like Sawinski. You know, before you really didn't know what you had with him. Wasn't on the 40-man roster, was still a double A. Then he kind of hits a little bit here. And now you're thinking, well, maybe now this is a piece in the outfield in the future. So maybe your outfield mix doesn't look quite the same as it did back in April, March. Same thing with a guy like Mitchell, with a guy like Swaggerty. You know, if those guys really can be everyday players out there, then there's less of a need to move O'Neill Cruz to left field or right field. And maybe he does stay there. If he does stay there, it's not the end of the world for Leover Peguero. He can still play second base.
Right.
And he's a guy who can flip-flop. He and Cruz, you know, Cruz could have a day off. Cruz could DH. Cruz could go out in the outfield a day or two here and there. So there'd still be plenty of opportunities for Peguero at short. But again, they're looking for what are our options in 2024, 25. And that's the kind of stuff you find out now.
Right. Yeah. Get it out of your system. See what you, I mean, and see if it, you know what? O'Neill, you're right. You can play short. We've watched it every day. You're wrong. You're going to the outfield. So something like that. You watch. Obviously, he's naturally gifted, and no question. Do you get any read? Because you know, when you're a double or triple, you do go through full seasons, so you do have to make some adjustments. But the sophistication of the analytics on this level of hot and cold are precise.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, have you heard whether he's the kind of young man that can adjust, or is there one way that he has to go about his business?
I think that's still kind of to be determined, especially at this level, because you know, at this level, adjusting to the pitchers at double and triple A is one thing, because there is movement of guys up and down, because you get different levels of ability, frankly, you know. And Up in the big leagues, the level of pitching that you get is going to be a lot more consistent, and it's going to be consistently good. And just the pressures of and the grind of a day-to-day kind of thing in the majors is different from those same kind of things in the minors. In the minors, you're trying to claw your way up, which is one thing, but trying to stay. I mean, you know, as Clint Hurdle always would say, there's no higher level. You don't go up anywhere from here. You know?
Right.
So I think we still, that's kind of a thing that they need to see. That's why, you know, getting him here at midseason, you know, it would have been nice probably to see him early in the year, but I think we all know a lot of what goes into the thinking of keeping him down.
Yeah.
But, you know, but this way at least you get a sense of, you know, of getting him through that and seeing how he responds. So far, from what I can tell so far, I don't think he's a guy who's going to be fazed by that.
Mm-hmm.
He really does seem to have kind of a natural joie de vivre out there. And that really, you know, that can carry you through some of the valleys that you go through at times.
They had, I don't know, 11,350 for the first game he played. They then had 11,292, so they lost 58 people in the second game he played. They had 14,000 last night. There doesn't seem to be the initial, I can't wait to go out and see these guys play. Now, is it just because it's Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, or is it something else?
Well, you know, I was thinking back to when I started covering this beat. Andrew McCutchen was still a guy in the minors who everybody wanted to see.
Yeah,
and I remember asking Dave Littlefield every year in spring training for a couple of years. No, not this year. Is this the year you bring up? No. So there was all that hype and suspense, and then McCutchen got to the big leagues, and I'd have to go back and look at my notes, but I would wager that the crowd likely wasn't all that huge when he made his debut in 2009, I want to say it was.
Right, yeah.
And there was, you know, and I've seen the debuts of Starting Marte, well, even though that happened in Houston, but you know, Polanco, Tyone, Gerrit Cole, all these guys, you know, Pedro Alvarez, remember that saga, getting into the majors. And then they get there, and you think, oh, they're going to have 30,000 people. No.
No.
14, 12. You know, it's I think some of it is there's a group of Pirates fans. Pirates fans have been conditioned to always be looking 5 years ahead at the kids in the minors because that next wave is going to be the one that puts us over the top, baby. And they've also now kind of grown accustomed to treating, I think, the Pirates as like, well, do we go to Kennywood Park today? Do we go out to a nice dinner, or do we go to the Pirates? You know, it's not a thing the way that going to, you know, Heinz Field for a Steelers game is a thing, or the way that for those maniacs who drive 200 miles on Saturday mornings to go park their, from Pittsburgh to State College is a thing. You know, it's just not that way with the Pirates. So I'm not surprised. I mean, I figured, you know, when I did write that, yeah, maybe give them a little attendance bump. I think it's something we'll see maybe an additional couple of hundred or so over the course of a month or two or three. You know, people, yeah, I'll go see this kid. But that first night, I was covering the Pirates when Steven Strasburg debuted with the Nationals.
Yeah.
And that was like a national holiday in D.C. The national TV was there. This place was sold out. It was an event. It was a thing. It was a happening. It just isn't that way with the Pirates.
Okay, so now let me bring up the hidden question.
All right.
And that is the lease at PNC Park, I believe, runs out in 2030.
Mm-hmm.
I believe that is correct.
Believe you right there, yeah, 30-year lease, correct.
If there's no expansion, so in other words, Nashville, Portland, others are in play, are the Pirates in Pittsburgh in 2031 if things don't change?
Good question. That all depends, or a lot of that depends, on the guy who owns the team, and good luck trying to crawl inside his brain.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
He's a guy who, the way the owner strikes me, when I think about Bob Nutting as the Pirates owner, I don't necessarily think of him as a guy who knows a ton about the game so much, or maybe even particularly doesn't like baseball per se.
Mm.
He strikes me as kind of a guy who, you know, he talks about it in the way you know, if you own something, you know, your favorite pair of shoes, you know? I like this pair of shoes better than the other one because they look nice or they're comfortable. Mm. But, you know, if there's a better opportunity out there, if there's a market that's demanding it, why wouldn't you think about it at that point if you're Bob Nutting? Because catch fire, let's say, in 2025, things come together, and they do what they did back in 13. I still think that the people in Pittsburgh don't expect it would last, and I don't think it could last. I think we're always going to kind of be in this cycle of they build up a little bit and they build up, and maybe there's some setbacks or maybe some planets align and unicorns dance on the face of the earth, and boom, they're in the playoffs. But it's not going to be there for long. And eventually people will just be like, all right, now we're looking at it. Let's take the kids down Kennywood again today. So if you're Bob Nutting, you know, when you're out of that lease situation, why wouldn't you think about it? You know, the world could be vastly different in MLB in six, seven, eight years. So who knows?
Well, see, that's why I strongly feel that something would benefit. It's quick cash for baseball if they would do it. It would be like $2 to $2.5 billion an expansion team. But two expansion teams and taking two markets out of play would benefit the fans of Pittsburgh a lot. Just to take it off the table. Because look, I think Pittsburgh baseball fans have proven to me that if you give them something, they'll support it beyond words and turn out in droves. They've proven that to me. The problem is you got to have somebody cooperate with them.
What was one of the biggest storylines out of that game a couple nights ago when O'Neill and Blind Madras made their debut? It was that there was a squirrel on the field.
Yes.
Steve, there was a squirrel in the field. I don't know if you heard. It was very exciting.
I saw it. I know it caused some confusion in the broadcast booth for a moment because the fans were cheering. And then they finally realized they weren't cheering for the ball club.
Right. So I see that, and I think to myself, you could say, you know, it's not a good baseball town. Well, maybe to a degree. I just think that's kind of sports in general now. It's the shiny object.
Yeah.
And even if it's something in the stadium that's not at all related to the team on the field, it's a shiny object. And, so, you know, I don't know if that bodes well or not for the future of the sport, but there's probably something there to be to determine.
Yeah. All right, so let's talk about the other kid that came up with O'Neill Cruz, who's, he made a nice play in right field.
Yeah,
you know he's contributed. I think he's hit a home run.
Yes, he did.
Yeah, what do you think of him?
Blaine Madris is a guy who, you know, he was one of the. You know, it was funny the way that Ben Sherrington described him was with an organizational win. He was a guy who looked like just a guy when he was in the minors. You know, he was good player, solid player, not flashy. Not somebody who was ever in those top 30 lists, you know, that they put out of prospects and all that. He was just a guy. But he was a guy who just kept playing well and kept playing a little bit better. And there were some people in the front office, some of the coaching staff, development staff, who, you know, to use the old baseball phrase, were pounding the table for him a little bit. Like, hey, look, this guy just sticks around. And we say, well, that's good, but can you hit for more power? And then he hits for a little more power. Well, that's good. Can you boost your average? And he boosts his average, and that's great. But can you play better defense? And he plays better defense. So, you know, I love to see guys like that because they're, to me, that's baseball. That's sport. You know, that's the kind of thing you want to see is a guy who, you know, he could make a nice living in the minors or just getting by or whatever. But he just kept kind of grinding, and now look at him. He's, playing every day pretty much in the big leagues. You know, we'll see if it lasts or not. But at this point, great story, great kid. You know, seems to have a really good head on his shoulders.
Yeah.
Had his uniform number 66. We were kind of joking that, you know, maybe next year they give you a real uniform number. And he's like, oh, dude, I don't. I just have a big league uniform.
Good for him.
So. You know, 66, pretty good number to have in Pittsburgh, too. So
yeah, that's not bad. That's not bad. That's not bad at all. If you get the kind of production that 66 had, he's going to be in the Hall of Fame.
Exactly.
I've always been one that the vast majority of time when you take an established player and you deal them for, quote, prospects, I always feel like 80 to 90% of the prospects are, I'm sorry, but you got nothing out of the trade. That's me.
Yeah.
That's me.
Mm-hmm.
Now, obviously, they got Brian Reynolds in the McCutchen trade.
Right.
O'Neill Cruz is for the old State College spike, Tony Watson. can Cruz's success be a validation of dealing an established player to a contender for a prospect? Can O'Neill Cruz validate that?
I think so, yeah. I mean, that's kind of when Neil Huntington pulled the trigger in that trade. Waddy was a pretty important piece of a really good bullpen. And, you know, and he could pitch. Any bad thing that ever happened with him is when they tried to make him a closer, and it just didn't work. But any other job you wanted him to do in that bullpen, he would do it and do it really well. And so it hurt a little bit to part with him. You know, they were taking a piece out of the program, and they were taking a big gamble with Cruz because, you know, he was big and rangy, and the Dodgers originally wanted him at third base, and then he threw the ball all over the place a little bit, and just, you know, then they had some better fits at third, so they moved him to short, and he still threw the ball all over the place, but you could see some stuff there. But who knows? Can you tease it out of him, or does he just become a kid who throws the ball all over the place and is burned out, you know? Yeah. And kudos to Neil, to Huntington, for pulling the trigger on that one, and to the development staff. And they realized that he was a guy that if you rush – he's one of those guys, too, I think a poster boy for don't speed him along too much.
Right.
You know, because there were a lot of rough edges there, really rough edges. And there was some maturity he had to go through, and some you know, smoothness to add to his game and just some savvy he needed to get. But there was enough to build on there that they could afford to wait and really try to mold him into something special. Yeah, and if he clicks, even if he becomes, you know, doesn't have to become a Hall of Famer for it to click. He could become a very good everyday guy. He could become an all-star.
Sure.
But either way, I think, yeah, this is one of those times when you say, whew, all right, that worked out pretty well. You know, sometimes we're kind of hasty to, you know, to judge trades. I mean, you look at the Clay Holmes deal. It doesn't look so good right now, does it?
Right.
But who knows, you know? And, right. And for every two or three of those, it's just totally blow up in your face.
Right.
For every Chris Archer deal. Oh, did I really say that?
Oh, excuse me. I think some knives need to be removed from backs. Oh, because the problem with that is you didn't. You twisted it just a little bit.
I know.
When car repairs get difficult.
Well, I just don't know.
Me neither.
We get good. Sunbury Motors. More than quality new and used cars, Sunbury Motors specializes in complicated auto repair diagnosis. They can handle intricate repairs and even complete auto body with service open Monday through Friday, 7 till 4. And Sunbury Motors has made simple repairs easy. Maintaining your vehicle is necessary. Finding the time to do it is difficult. Welcome to Sunbury Motors Quick Lane. Open 7 till 4, Monday through Friday. Just walk in or call ahead. Relax in their remodeled waiting room with Wi-Fi, beverages, and snacks. Will Sunbury Motors factory trained techs take care of your oil change, tire alignments, brakes, and inspections. Quick Lane, 6:30 to 6, Monday through Friday, Saturday, 6:30 till 2. Sunbury Motors, Ford and Hyundai, North 4th Street, Sunbury. And Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. We take the out of auto repair.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. Ford, Kia, Hyundai. Great brands, great warranties. Budget may dictate, well, you know what we need to save some money. How about pre-owned vehicles? Absolutely. Pre-owned inventory, great. With the Sunbury Motors guarantee, so important. And the service department, from routine and oil changes to inspections to diagnostics, they handle it all at Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors, Kia, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf, online at sunburymotors.com. All right, final 18 minutes of the show today. Matt's been pacing all day because the Astros are actually a decent baseball team. And then, of course, there's the big arbitration hearing tomorrow.
That is true, and Judge continues to make a good case for himself after two more homers last night.
Well, everybody knows he's going to get his money.
Yeah.
Yankees know he's going to get his money. I'm telling you, the reason this is a 30,000, my opinion from 30,000 feet is the only reason they're going through the process is that the other major league clubs are demanding the Yankees go through the process because they don't want them settling and setting a precedent of a high number on a settlement. Okay? That's what I think.
I totally agree with that.
I mean, that's why I think they haven't settled. Not on a long-term contract. I mean, they're obviously not there in a long-term contract, but settling this on a one-year deal, you know, because let's face it, the Yankees are sitting there saying, I probably should get the $21 million. But that'll be tomorrow. The NBA draft is tonight. Again, this is the NBA draft is interesting because, I mean, all these guys are, for the most part, 18 and 19 years old. A couple of 21-year-olds in here. Older players don't usually
it's just hard for them to get drafted. The game is so different at that level now. They're drafting potential, but you know, but you run into this, and I'll give you an example. There was a young player, and this will go back to the days when high school players could be drafted, which I think that day is going to be re-entering the conversation here within a year or two. But Jermaine O'Neal, he was drafted by the Portland Trail Blazers, 18 out of high school. Obviously, great potential, big kid. And just could never get any traction with Portland. Could never get any traction with Portland. You know, I mean, everybody goes through these adjustment periods. And he was drafted in 96. Okay. And he was the 17th overall pick in the draft. And he just couldn't get going. 4 points a game, 4.5, 2.5, 4 points a game, 3 rebounds. I mean, that's what he averaged in Portland. So he leaves and goes to Indiana. And he was traded to Indiana. And suddenly, out of nowhere, he thrives. Now, he's 4 years older. So now, at this point, he's 22. And with Indiana, suddenly, out of nowhere, 13 points a game, 19 a game, 21 a game, 20 a game, 24 a game, 20 a game, 19. And this was the complaint they had in Portland. The complaint they had in Portland was, great, we spent all that time and money. We're the ones that actually developed him like he was a college player. And then, you know, yeah, we trade him. And guess what? He flourishes someplace else because he's older and we developed him. And that became a complaint among teams that were drafting high school players. But that was, he's a perfect example of draft a young player, develop, work, the whole thing, and you get nothing. And you, the team that drafted him, didn't get anything out of him. That's what you're fighting here with the NBA draft. A lot of these guys, that's what a lot of these guys are. You're talking about the potential. Will they be with you when it comes time in their career where they're flourishing? And most of these guys, I mean, have you ever seen Kate Cunningham play a game, Matt?
I did, and I was intrigued by him.
No, I'm talking about in the NBA.
Oh, in the NBA? Detroit. No. I saw like a handful of games when the Sixers would play him. And
That's the only time you see him.
Yeah.
You don't see him. I mean, look, Christmas Day, these guys are at home with family. Jabari Smith's going to be home with his family. Chet Holmgren is going to be home with his family. Jaden Ivey. My goodness, you're going to Sacramento. You know, when's the last time Sacramento made the playoffs? How about 2006? Nobody wants to play there. They're going to get money. All of them will. They're all going to get money. But that's going to have to compensate them for not only their basketball play, but also kind of sliding far to the background in the NBA pecking order. Because I think the only playoff team that drafts in the top 10 is New Orleans. I think they're 8th. But that's it. that's where you, you know, get to a winner and you'd be amazed at the impact you can have right away in helping a winner because you're surrounded by other really good players. But that's the draft. You know, it'll be tonight. Watch. You know, I have a game tonight, so I'll keep up with it on my iPad. Words I thought I'd never say 10 years ago.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much how I'll probably follow a good chunk of it tonight, but I mean, guess we'll see how it goes.
If I were home, I'd watch it because the picks actually go fast. You know, they don't drag it out like the NFL. But, I mean, if I were home, I would watch it. I definitely would. And the second round flies by. I think it's like 2 minutes a pick or some crazy thing like that. But there are not a lot of great players in this draft. I mean, there's some good players, but not great players. All right. The LIV Tour, Patrick Cantlay was asked about rumors about him going to the LIV Tour. Quote, my team handles all that kind of stuff. Whether it just be any of the sponsors that I have or anything in that department, I haven't had any direct contact with them recently. So I really, you know, I don't have anything like that outstanding.
So put him on the list as he's next.
not exactly a great answer. Look, let's start with this. You notice that they've come up with a proposal now. Supposedly, this supposedly the PGA Tour was warned about this back in the fall, and they had, and a proposal like they have on the table was actually thrown out there. Because look, these guys, they do want to make more money and they want to play fewer times. Can you blame them? I mean, let's face it, it's a nomadic life. And now this week's easy. I go from Boston down to Hartford. Okay. But it's a nomadic life. I started in Hawaii, then I go to like three or four stops in California, then I go to Florida and I make how many stops there. Now many of these guys do live in Florida. Then I got to go to Texas for a couple of stops, and then from Texas I got to go to New Orleans, and then from there I got to go. Now, you know, of course I got the majors mixed in. I got one in Florida, one in Georgia, one in Oklahoma, one in Massachusetts. Okay, but you see, you're all over the lot doing this, trying to make money, trying to make a living. So these top players want to make money, of course they do, but they don't want to play as many tournaments. You are an independent contractor, you can pick this out, but it is a nomadic life. It's not like the stable life that a Macatrillo has, that is, you know, pretty much just easy all the time. I mean, look at the suit. No?
Get the lingerie on the deck. Call the janitor.
People around the suit lead a nomadic life. Do you want to know why?
Probably to get away from him.
Just to get the heck away from him. We'll come back with more in a moment as we continue on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
This one's going to sting much more than others just because I think it was taken on. It was potential. I don't know. It's hard for me. This is going to be hard for me to speak. I'm going to have to speak. I'll speak with you tomorrow. You're going to see what I mean when you see the winning goal. And my heart breaks for the players because we probably still should be playing.
No good! No good! No good!
Lost, time to move on. All right.
Exactly.
Time to move on.
Telling you, Colorado is going to steamroll Tampa Bay tomorrow night.
Well, they'll come out. They'll come out of the gate ready to go. I mean, it's simple as that. I'd never discount the heart of a champion ever, and Tampa Bay is a champion.
I never did until this point. This is something that they're not going to get over, and I just don't see it.
We'll see. I don't know. I mean, I think Colorado, my entire thought has been Colorado may have been the best team last year and botched it in the playoffs the way Tampa did 3 years ago. All right. This year they've been the best team again. I know Florida had the higher number of points, but there's something about this team that I like. And remember, they've been playing without one of their top players. Colorado has not had the kid that scored the game-winning goal in the first overtime. But the game four is tomorrow night. And your Yankees tonight have the Astros. Is it a preview of the American League Championship Series?
Could be, and I would love it with 2017 in mind.
Yeah, anytime you play for another year, you're not any good yourself this year. You sort of play for you. Anytime we were motivated by what happened in 2002. Why? Huh? How about being motivated now for you?